Welcome back to another episode of Breakfast with the Gators, part of the Stadium and Gale Network. Coming to you Saturday night, fresh off of Gators thumping of Texas A&M after a bye week. Gators go on the road to College Station. How the boys feeling tonight?
The boys are feeling good. The boys are feeling good. We have a nice beach background here. Because when Todd Golden is your coach, everything's a breeze. You just sit there on the beach, you drink a beer, and you just watch us decimate other opponents. Doesn't matter if they're top of the league, bottom of the league, middle of the pack, we're going to kill
you. Home or away.
Home or away, neutral court. You know, as long as the guards don't go 0 for 20,000, we're probably going to beat you by 15, 20 points. And so life is a beach under Todd Golden. I'm enjoying it.
They can't go 0 for 20,000, but they can go 1 for 11 and still get you 19-point wins on the road against the second-best team in the league. Not a bad way to spend a Saturday night, boys, watching Todd Golden and the boys come out and just take care of business, just systematic, decimating a unethical basketball team, a team that doesn't play the game the way that everybody else plays it. They like to do their funky stuff. They like to press off every miss, and they threw up a lot of bricks early, kind of threw us off our rhythm. Once Ty got them into the locker room, got them settled down a little bit, hung 56 points in the second half. I mean, just dominated in the second half against a team that was 7-2 in league play.
This was welcome to the SEC for Buckyball.
Oh yeah.
I was kind of thinking, Will, I didn't put it in the chat watching the game, but, you know, when Hurley and Connecticut came down to Gainesville in Todd's first year, took it to us. I think that was the worst analytically game we've had. Kind of reminded me of that with Bucky's introduction into the SEC. Like, this is the top of the class. You try to bring a scrap fight to us, and we just bullied you all night.
Yeah. There are a couple similarities in that, in like we didn't have the personnel at the time to hang with the team that would go on to run through the NCAA tournament at a pace that we hadn't really seen since our 04s had done it. But the other thing is that, you know, the difference is that Todd Golden doesn't run some gimmicky type of basketball team. That was hack-a-shack on steroids. Just, you know, I miss a shot, I hack you. I mean, this was like I think the first time I've ever missed Pat Adams, because Pat Adams probably would have called 500 fouls.
We might be at the timeout right now.
Look of consternation right now, but their entire roster would have been fouled out, and we probably would have had 100 points and won by 40 instead of 19. But it was. Texas A&M's pathetic. That was a tough watch, and the Gators, sort of felt out their weird style. And then, I mean, it felt like after the first like 6 minutes, we had totally figured it out, and they couldn't score on us. It would have been a absolute bludgeoning in the first half if we could hit the broadside of the barn door from three outside of Urban. But just super impressive stuff from Todd Golden. It's just special to be able to run through teams on, especially away in the SEC like this.
Look of consternation on A&M players' faces every single time they got called for an obvious reach-in foul. It got to the point where it was comical towards the end. You got like two palms up in the air, like just totally shocked. Couldn't believe that a referee had the nerve and the gall to call a foul on him. After every single time they reached it, there was a time I thought that Tommy Houck was going to get decapitated trying to bring the ball across half court, and it turned into a live ball turnover. They took on the, if we're going to miss it, we're going to brick a shot, or we're going to turn the ball over and immediately start fouling, and the officials just aren't going to be able to call it every single time we do it. And it seemed like in the first half, I thought the guards were a little bit, I don't know if timid's the right word, but just wanting to
like
get
feeling them out.
It was like we just wanted to get it over half court, and once we got there, we could take a breath. And then in the second half, it totally switched from, all right, we're going to get the ball over half court, and we are going, and it's aggressive. We're looking for the lobs, we're looking for guys cutting to the rim, we're taking it straight to the basket, And obviously it worked. I mean, you look up at, you know, the under 12 in the second half, and it's already a 25-point game. I mean, they just really came out. You could see the halftime adjustment. And there was a point in the second half where I had the realization that we really need to appreciate what Todd Golden's doing right now. I mean, last year's national championship team, the biggest win we had on the road in league play was by 14 points. We, three of our last four road league games, we've won by 17, by 47, and then tonight by 19. So, I mean, just absolutely bludgeoning teams. So, appreciate Todd Golden. Appreciate what this basketball program's become under him, because it's not normal. And the more we keep doing this and doing it in different styles from year to year, the sooner NBA franchises are going to start looking his way and seeing what it is that he has going on in Gainesville, because it's a special run we're on right now.
Agreed, Dev. And again, part of the State of McGill Network and presented by our partner, Norris & Norris PA. Norris & Norris PA is out of Lake City, Florida, a preeminent law firm serving North Florida since 1985. And you can give a guy a call at 386-752-7240 if you need any assistance with business law matters, real estate wills, or trust and estate planning. Will, you were talking about just feeling them out in that first 10 minutes or so. I think the under eight timeout was at the 7:42 mark or somewhere in that ballpark. Since that moment, the last 27 and a half minutes of gameplay, we scored 73 points. Most of them, you know, I think we had 25 or 27 points in transition. I don't know how many paint points we ended up with. I think that was up there in the 40s as well. Again, just like you said, Dev, we just really need to appreciate what Todd Golden's built. You know, we've had some down football years, so to see the resurgence of the basketball program really makes the months of November through March, even April, you know, makes you feel like just get the football program rolling and this team, this university and our fans will have all the right in the world to talk our smack like we have for, you know, our entire lives.
Well, you know, maybe we can talk Coach Summerall's press conference here after we recap this game. But I thought that for the first 8 minutes, the commentators, they kept talking about how A&M was getting all these good looks and they just couldn't get them to go down. And that's kind of like been the story of Florida's season and why we aren't undefeated right now. You know, we probably would beat Duke if we could hit any sort of three, would have beaten Arizona if we could hit two threes. You know, it's just Florida has been so good in the front court, and it's really just been a couple games where the guards haven't hit shots. Yet the, you know, so we're kind of playing this game where A&M is intentionally mucking up the game, trying to make it as sort of a scrappy, gross basketball game as possible. And we just beat them at their own game. I mean, you have Micah Hanlogden, who, you know, we've been critical of him, and he has moments where he kind of, you know, looks lost or has a bad foul and he sort of doesn't get in the game. But this game in particular, and I think you could say it for the past couple of games, he looks like a scrappy guard. Like, that's a 7-foot-1 guy diving on the floor after loose balls, trying to get him, just doing everything. And like, I think he only ends up with like 4 or 6 points, whatever, but they always seem to be crucial. Like, we miss a shot after they had a made bucket, he's there to get a rebound and like pop it in, and it just slows the run, kind of keeps things even keeled until you can get Ruben and Condon back in the game, really, to, you know, sort of put the full court press and put the pedal to the metal on them. But I thought those first 8 minutes were so impressive. Like, to hold a team like that, that is just known for jacking up threes and making a lot of them. I think Neil Blackman said on Florida Basketball Hour when he was doing his game preview, like, they are sort of Alabama offense on steroids, where they take a ton of threes, but they also make a ton of threes. And so they are like the best 3-point shooting scoring team in the conference. And to hold them to 2 points there when they were clearly trying to look for threes, and then when they couldn't get them because they couldn't shoot over us, they were clearly bothered by our length. Then they couldn't get anything inside. It was just block shot after block shot. I thought I was watching a replay of Joakim Noah in the 2006 national championship game against UCLA. Like, they couldn't get a thing. You know, we couldn't really secure rebounds, and I think if we could had secured those rebounds, the lead at halftime probably would have been about 20 instead of 11. But like, the announcers were talking about, you know, how close A&M made it to make it 11 at halftime. And like you said, Devin, the Gators just came out right from the jump in the second half, and kind of showed what the game really had been in those first 4 minutes to put it out of reach and just let Pop Isaacs try to jack up a bunch of razzle dazzle threes, and none of them worked. And
yeah,
you know, here we are, top of the SEC for the first time since 2014. That's crazy.
Yeah, it was a really weird first half. Like, they had 12 offensive rebounds in the first 7 or 8 minutes of the game and didn't do anything with any of them. But I think, to your point, it kept them in the game. There was a point where it was 13-3 or 13-2 for what seemed like 4 minutes of game time. And at that point in the game, I was a little bit concerned, not because I didn't think that, you know, we were playing phenomenal on defense, but just because it seemed like they had us so off rhythm with our offense that, you know, when you have them where they don't make a field goal for 9 minutes in the first half, you wish that you had more than a 10-point lead. And they got it cleaned up, and whatever it was that, whatever the adjustment was, and it didn't seem like it was really rocket science. It was, you know, don't just be content with getting it over half court. Just attack, keep going, keep running, get all the way to the rim, because they can't be pressing like this and also back on defense at the same time. And I think that we took full advantage of that. Probably put the tape out there for everybody else to try to mimic on offense on what to do to handle, you know, the gimmick press that they like to run. I mean, that to running press down by 30 in the second half was going to drive me insane too. Like, it, they called a timeout to when they cut the lead to 19 points with 20 seconds left. I was really hoping that Golden would call another lob there at the end just to put an exclamation mark on it after the
we did, but CJ Ingram missed it.
Yeah, we tried.
And then Todd got on him for not hustling back on defense.
I like that too. I like that a lot.
Yeah,
that explains the standard that the program's at right now.
It does. I mean, it does.
It's you don't want to invoke like guys like Saban lightly just because everybody wants their program to be like that. But it reminds you of how Saban would be at the end of an Alabama game when they're up by 50 against somebody, and he's on the sideline just chewing somebody's ass out. And you look up, you see Todd Golden kind of being wired in that same way, where, you know, CJ Ingram gets his opportunities, a top 50 overall recruit. Everybody's really excited for what his future is going to look like. And he misses the lob, you know, and doesn't fully hustle back, gives up a three on the other end late in the game. And Todd's just going crazy on the sideline. I mean, it's the standard that the program's at right now. And I love it.
Yeah. You mentioned the adjustments. One thing real quick, before I let Jackson transition, and it, one of the things that I think, you know, we can never appreciate enough about Todd Golden is how he has built the roster the last 2 years to be able to withstand any type of team. I mean, you know, we can go run up and down with the best of them like Alabama. We can muck it up like teams like Texas A&M want to do with their press. We can muck it up in a rock fight with teams like Tennessee or Houston. And, you know, we're just, we can play finesse ball with teams like Arizona and Duke. And so he's built this roster to be so versatile. And I think that's just going to pay dividends in March, because March can really be very matchup dependent. And I think that's something that Texas A&M is going to struggle with if they end up like it could be a pro, it could be a con, you know, they could end up on some team. Like, if they get a mid-major team, you know, they win their first round game in a mid-major, they somehow line up in an upset in the second round with them. I think they're going to dominate them just because it would be tough to handle the press. But if they, you know, come up against some team that's got a lot of size like we have, then they're going to struggle to advance past the first round. And so we'll see how it goes. But I'm so impressed with the way that Todd makes his halftime adjustments, the way that he has built a roster to be able to withstand whatever type of team that we face in college basketball. It just warm and fuzzy feelings for all the Gators right now.
Yeah. You know, we've harped on the versatility aspect of, and we'll get to football here in a little bit with the press conferences, but yeah, you're just hitting it right on the head, Will. The versatility of how we can match up with different programs, the length, you know, my grandpa, who's an Arkansas fan, was texting me during the game. He goes, "Is this just not very unusual? Texas A&M missing a lot of threes or shots compared to what they have all season." But the length that we have. I think A&M shot 13 of 38 inside the arc. And I didn't see a whole lot of mid-range jumpers either. So the presence of Ruben, there were some highlights. I think the announcers replaying when they drive down low. You know, they weren't looking to hit the spin move or go off shoulder just because we know we had Ruben or Kondo or Mike on the other end ready for a block. I think we had 7 blocks, 6 of those in the first half. Just the defense is – the defense wins championships. It did for us in March. I know we had the scoring ability and some miracle moments. But with how this team is playing, I think we're averaging – opponents are averaging about 1.5 or 1.5 percentage points less this year, shooting the 2-ball against us. And that just shows, you know, how we've kind of identified this team is we're going to win down low. We're going to bully you. It is pretty remarkable. A&M had 19 offensive rebounds, even had more offensive rebounds than the Gators. But when you're shooting 30-something 3-balls, you're going to get a lot of loud misses. They had a lot of ugly ones in that first half that just kind of fell into their hands. But I think that this team really took the next step when we found Zay Brown as our 8th man. I think he was 5-9 tonight, 12 points, had one stretch there in the first half where he caused 3 straight Texas A&M fouls. He's able to get in transition. What have you just seen, Will or Dev, his emergence? I think really that Georgia game where we've now won 8 of our last 9 since that moment. And what he brings to the floor, that toughness and that ability to bring an additional guard who's kind of got the physicality of a linebacker that could rebound, defend, and just has probably the rawest athleticism on the team.
You answered your own question a little bit. I think it's that toughness and the physicality that he brings to the backcourt that the other guys don't necessarily have. I keep going back. I think it was the Vanderbilt game when he kind of really emerged. He had that baseline drive where he went right into a guy's chest, drew a foul, made the free throws. I think that kind of embodies what Zay Brown's become for this team. Just toughness, grittiness. He's going to get – he's not afraid to take on contact. You know, everybody would like to make a couple more shots here and there. But I think him on the dribble, getting to the rim, is when he's at his best. And, you know, when he's playing hard on defense too, he's putting together really good minutes for us. And he's doing it in a way that's kind of differentiating himself from, you know, Urban, Boogie, and Zay Lee, or Xavien Lee too. So it's been huge role throughout conference play and
and including that Vanderbilt game, he's 5-28 from the floor and I think 5-11 from deep, 15-28 from the floor, 5-11 from deep. So even in his 11-12 minute role, he's showing the ability to knock down shots at a high rate.
He's doing exactly what we coached him up to do about a month ago this time. Yep. We said if we can get this from Zay Brown, we're going to be really good. But I'm really impressed with his body control. He's clearly such a great athlete, but he goes in there seeking contact above the rim, takes the hit, and he, you can tell that he sort of readjusts himself in midair. And it seems like he makes every single one of those, unless he's really hammered, then he still gets fouled. And, you know, he's been a pretty good free throw shooter. And that's just – guards like that are so big for March because there is going to be a time where, you know, a team's going to hit back-to-back threes. They're going to be on a 6-0 run. The crowd's going to be going when you're in the Sweet 16. And if you got a guard like Zay Brown that can just attack the basket and sort of he's so aggressive that it catches the defender off guard and he can at least draw a whistle from the ref and go make 2 free throws to, like, get the guys to settle down for a second. Like, those are run-killing guards that they kind of go unnoticed, but they're just huge plays in a close game. Where, you know, it's college basketball, so it can leads can go from 3 to down 6 to down 12 like that. Just go ahead and ask Rick Barnes the last couple times he's played Kentucky. And so I'm impressed with his ability to take it to the basket and absorb the contact, readjust himself and lay it in. It's impressive. I'm sure that's stuff that they work on in practice, but his development this season from, you know, when he was barely playing in the non-con to now is as the established 8th man has been really, really fun to watch. Good to see. And it's nice to see you know, like some growth from some players like that. Like we seem to have that a lot recently after not having it for, you know, every year since 2015.
It doesn't necessarily have to be said, but it's easy to take for granted just how good Tommy Houck is too. I mean, just best player on the floor every time out there. He had a quiet first half. And then to what did he end up with, 23?
Yeah, 23 or 22 of them coming in the second half.
Yeah, and 7 assists, just affecting the game everywhere, still making all the hustle plays. I mean, he's just – you can't say enough about him. He's a lottery pick. He's best player on the team, or best potential SEC player of the year. I mean, just – You can't say enough complimentary things about Thomas Houck. He affects winning every single time we play, and it's easy to take it for granted just because, you know, it could be a ho-hum 23. Kind of took over in the second half of this game, but just over the last couple of years, how much fun has it been to watch Tommy Houck?
And now he's got a target on his back with scumbag cheaters like Rylan Griffin targeting him. Would have been thrown out of a football game for that hit. Ridiculous.
I've seen Gator.
He should do jail time.
Get called for targeting for less than that.
I mean, he hit Tommy harder than Jordan Castell hit anybody in 3 years. It is fun though, getting under all these people's skin. We're dominating Alabama. They're in shambles.
That's
they don't
a
know
really
what's
good
going
point.
On with legal with NCAA football. They know nothing because we're just killing them.
That's a good
Auburn,
point.
We made
too.
Their coach want to go run for politics.
We're into deep into February at this point, 10 games into league play, over halfway point of the SEC season. If you're watching an SEC basketball game and there's an announcer that's saying there's not a dominant team in the league this year, they are not worth listening to because they are obviously not watching the Florida Gators enough. That we're 8-2 in SEC play this year, obviously two games that we should have won. The 8 wins, 7 of those 8 wins are by 15 points or more. Blood-bending teams. If that's not a dominant team in the SEC this year, then I don't know what is. It's a different team from last year, and I think that people, you know, it's an unfair comparison to have to live up to for an entire season, being the defending national champs. But this team, the ceiling when they're playing well is just as high. I mean, just the way that they can absolutely bludgeon you is the ceiling's as high as last year.
Yeah. I mean, we could win the national championship. We're number 6 in KenPom. We're number 5 in Evan Maya. I mean, where we are, the Florida Gators are on their way to a 2-seed. We got a massive week coming up. We got Georgia.
It's a tricky game on Wednesday or Tuesday.
Tricky game on Wednesday. They are going to be – they've kind of rebounded since we smacked them down and since A&M took care of business whenever they went on the road and Mike White failed to defend his home floor. But it's going to be their Super Bowl, no pun intended. And then Saturday, obviously, we're unwelcoming Denzel Aberdeen back on Valentine's Day to show him tons of love. In the O-Dome. And so two huge games coming up. But the way the Gators are playing, I mean, we look like a top 10 team in the country that can win the national championship, you know, like,
I think the problem is
look better than Duke looked tonight against North Carolina.
Yeah. And Dev, to your point, why, you know, some of these media pundits might not agree. There's a dominant team in league play. We just had so many standalone primetime games in the non-conference where, you know, a lot of your top 25 teams maybe aren't playing as tough of a schedule as we did. And so those folks just see those losses that time period. And, you know, this Saturday it was great in college basketball. We were teed up with the Kentucky and Tennessee game going on at the same time as us. It did help. We got Alabama standalone Sunday when we steamrolled them. I think that was the largest viewing on ABC for a college basketball game in like 20 years. So I think that perception still in their mind of how the Gators looked in November, December, but the stretch the steps we've taken of improvement in the last 5 weeks, and which is expected. We all agreed, some of us agreed You know, two new guards, brand new system. You're sliding Tommy into the starting role to the three. It's not an overnight fix. You had some hiccups with injuries in the offseason. But now that we've got, 24 games under our belt, this team's starting to get hot at the right time. We mentioned, I think, a week or a week and a half ago, I think it was this week last year when we went on the road and just steamrolled Auburn and kind of got onto the national stage as a title contender. And we might have even hit our stride a little bit earlier this year, playing through our identity. Ruben, just a ho-hum 10 and 15. You know, if anybody else in the country did that, it'd be all over the news. You'd be winning SEC Player of the Week weekly, right? And for this guy, it's just like, well, that it's just Ruben Chileu at this point. He's going to be, you know, hopefully an All-American in some capacity, at least first team All-SEC, SEC Defensive Player of the Year. The way he's just able to dictate a game, even when it's not kind of the pace that he excels at, when we're out running like that against teams like Texas A&M, he's still finding ways to contribute. I think he had 12 or 13 defensive rebounds. Just what did you see from him, Will? You know, teams are kind of taking him out of his offensive role a little bit that we saw that Georgia, that Tennessee game, and others.
Yeah, I think after that team started keying in on him, starting with Auburn, and it took us a minute to adjust to that. But in the second half of the Auburn game, we really came out and sort of, you know, we clawed our way all the way back and probably should have closed it out and won it. But it's, you know, it's kind of what I was saying earlier. It's a testament to Todd Golden's ability to build this roster to win in so many different ways and so many different styles. You know, Ruben is, we even got to see him play point a little bit tonight. He had one really nice, where he took the ball all the way up the floor. And, that was pretty great. But, it's funny. It's like, think back in like in your head in the game, did Ruben play well? And you're like, I don't remember him like, you know, making any clutch shots or doing anything. And then you look up his stats and he just like had 10 and 15. I think one play that really stuck out in my mind is he defended a three and then the ball is kind of a bad miss, but the rebound fell in front of the free throw line. So you had to go a solid like 15 feet. First guy there, even though there were, you know, all these other guys, around there. He beats everybody to the ball, gets it, clears it out, turns it around, and we're off and running in transition. And that's just the kind of hustle and effort that he plays with. And I, you know, we were joking that he, you know, might have some advanced physics knowledge or something and might want to be a doctor a few weeks ago. But that's sort of what we're talking about. It's like he sees the ball come off the guy's hands and he goes exactly to the spot before it's even there. He's first guy there and he's, you know, leading the fast break with the quick outlet pass. So just super impressive stuff, even if it's not scoring, you know, 22 points a game, but 10 and 15 in an up and down transition game like that. Several blocks in the first half that were crucial. Great defense, especially defending without fouling when Condon was struggling with that a little bit. I know some of those fouls were a bit phantom, and it seemed like he got fouled 10 times more than he committed fouls. But I mean, you can't say enough great things about Ruben. He's the ultimate teammate. He's the ultimate Gator. He's just one of my favorite Gator players of all time.
Yeah, and just that championship mentality is what it boils down to. We saw Tommy in the second half. I think Xavier Lee short-sided one from the corner. Tommy somehow runs 25 feet, is the first one there, tries to lay it in, gets fouled, right? Finishes the game 9 for 9. His last 9 free throw attempts for makes. That's just the difference with this team. That's what it's all about with your three front court players returning from a championship defending program. We don't allow other teams to make those kind of championship plays against us. And two, it seems like we do it routinely every night.
Yeah, I mean, so the announcers, when there was a great one that really got clowned on Twitter where, you know, A&M hits back-to-back threes to cut it to 19. And
21.
He says, here come the Aggies. And they were calling this game like it was a 6-point game. And the Aggies had finally cut it from like an 11 to a 6 or something like that. But really, it's the opposite. It's like Florida plays every single possession like it is do or die, even if they're up 25 points. And that's just what's so beautiful to watch as a Gator fan and probably so frustrating to experience if you are one of our opponents. I mean, that's why teams are starting to hate Todd Golden and hate the Gators, is because not only are we better than you, we are going to work a lot harder than you after we've beaten your butt for 35 minutes.
By the time the announcer finished his sentence saying, "Here come the Aggies," I think it was Zay Brown was on the other end dunking it. It was before he could even finish the sentence saying, "Here come the Aggies," we had two on the other end.
I was just about to say that reverts back to Will's point 20 minutes ago. He goes, you know, when a team goes on a 6-0 run and they got Zay Brown at the other end, I mean, the announcer couldn't even get it, his sentence completed before Zay Brown's above the rim slamming it home. And, you know,
and it's so impressive to have that. Like when you're able to play harder than the team you're playing against as the defending champs, I mean, what a combo that is. It's special. I don't know if this team has the shooting and the guard play and all that to win it all. We'll see. That'll get settled come March, but they play so hard on a night to night basis. And that's what makes them, I think, so much fun to watch and such a joy.
Finish your point.
I was going to say, even going back to early in the season when we're 6-4 and struggling, you could still see those remnants. Like you go down 18 and Cameron Indoor, it would be very easy to kind of cave and to break a little bit. No, I just systematically come back, take the lead with less than a minute left, ball in, bounce our way at the end. They make a shot, you know, tip your cap to them. Same thing with the Arizona game. You don't get a shot. Same thing with UConn. You don't make a shot. You know, those are top four teams in the country. Like it happens. You lose close games like that. And the way that they've just developed as a team over the course of, you know, it's been 23 games now, they were right there in November and December. And I think that this team is just the upward trajectory that they're on. They're getting exponentially better week to week. And to be a team that was that good in November and December and to be getting this much better this quickly, I mean, that's why we're saying that the ceiling on this team is so high.
I would like to point out this podcast did point out during the Georgia game, or I guess the post-game show that we did, that the Georgia game, we've now won 8 of our last 9, including that game. That was the first game this team looked like they were having fun, kind of got that defending champ kind of mantra off their shoulders a little bit, all the pressure, and like, all right, let's go out there and play basketball like we know how to do. And what'd you say, Dev? 8 of these 9 wins we've had have been by – or 7 of the 8 wins have been by 15 or more points. Like,
yep.
Just going out there and playing free, loose. It doesn't matter what kind of defense these teams are throwing at us, what kind of game they want to play. We're going to out-hustle you. We're going to out-fight you. And really, we're just going to go wherever you want to play and kick your ass.
I mean, they've been so good, they beat the tough coaching out of us. Like, running out of bad things to say.
That was what I was just about to say. We've had 33 minutes of praise. I think that we need a quick little tough coaching segment.
Mid-game,
go ahead. You want to go first?
I am worried about Boogie. He truly has not been able to hit a three. It has not mattered. But he, like, you got to go look up the stat, Jackson. I think he's actually like 0 for his last 18 or 19.
It's something I think that. He is. I'm pulling it up.
He has missed a ridiculous amount of threes in a row, and it's getting to the point where every time he shoots it, I'm thinking like, not, oh, that looks good coming off the hands. It's like regression to the mean. This has got to go in. Like
Chinyelu under the rim yet.
0 for 14, hasn't hit one since the Oklahoma game, which he went 1 for 5. So I don't know where in that stretch he hit that one. So he could be 0 for 18. If you start that game 1 for 1.
At some point in March, you're going to need your point guard to make a three.
Yeah.
Like it's joking now, but at some point in March.
But again,
Boogie and again, Lee make a three.
Lee shot it a little bit better, but Lee has been quite.
He was great in transition tonight. Lee, he wasn't knocking down the perimeter shot. Yeah, I know he had one early, but him finishing at the rack today in transition was probably the best we've seen him running the length of the court.
I think these games that get sort of up and down transition, like Alabama and A&M, they suit him pretty well. Whereas games like Auburn and Tennessee, he struggled a little bit. But I guess luckily for Boogie, Boogie's a much better shooter off the dribble, sort of when he can get into like his mid range. But over these last few games, we haven't really had an opportunity for him to kind of be late shot clock, you know, dribbling and jacking up a three. So that's my little spin zone for the tough coaching. But yeah, come on, 0-for-18 as a Division I college basketball player. The offer to play horse is still up there, and I still got my money on me.
We coached mid game. As long as some good adjustment by us to we addressed that Thomas Houck was cold from the free throw line, and I think he started 1-for-3 and or
one for four
and made his last nine. So credit us for that, for that adjustment during the game.
Yeah,
what but it's so do? It's so hard to like it's you know you can pick things apart a little bit, but when you're just going out there and beating the living tar out of teams week in and week out, obviously we're going to throw a hiccup in there every once in a while. It's basketball, and so we'll get back to our tough coaching. But when you're playing like this, you know we had our conversation during the game when we only had 13 points in the first 12 minutes, and we scored 73 in the next 27. So, but from a full 40 minute perspective, it's been hard to criticize right now with how we're rolling and getting back in time. It's still remarkable. Like my grandpa, I was talking to him after the game. He goes, I can't believe that's the first time you've been in the first place in the league since 2014. I was like, well, Bob, you got to remember we had Mike White in here for 7 years and, you know, Golden didn't have it rolling that first year and a half, 2 years. And even what did we start last year in league play? 3-2?
I think that might be right.
And we still had another loss. Or wow, the league was just so good last year. You know, finishing what we finished wasn't good enough to overtake anybody atop the standings, despite rolling Auburn. But just a testament of how quickly he's built this team. And you know, we're the cream of the crop of the league. We've got the most national titles since the turn of the century. I think the most Final Fours, Elite Eights.
One more tough coaching point to cut in on the flowers that we're handing out again. Our bigs are so good at sealing in the lane, and this set of guards, I just wish every single game that they would throw more lobs. And we did it in the second half better than we did in the first half, but there's so many opportunities where they have guys cutting towards the basket and they either take it themselves or they just don't see it or, you know.
And we did immediately after you pointed it out, by the way.
Boogie had one right at like literally the next possession after I was calling for it. But it's something that's been there a lot all season that, you know, they've gotten better at using the seals to get to the rim. And now I think the next progression of that is the lobs at the rim. Alabama seems to play a style of defense that gets the best out of us when it comes to those types of lobs.
Well, they don't play any style of defense.
Correct. Correct. They just kind of let everybody sneak behind them and leave wide open rim runs. So
congrats to Little Nate Oates, by the way, today. Todd Golden said Todd Golden gave him permission to go into Auburn and win the game. And so Little Nate went in there and won it.
How about the Jungle tweeted all week after the clips of us chanting G League dropout? They're like, oh, wait till we get a hold of them. What we're going to say. And they just copied and pasted exactly what the Rowdy Reptile says. So we've been harsh on them, too. We've given them flowers for the DUI chant against Auburn, the G League dropout with Bediako, and now Auburn the Jungle, which is, you know, one of the most hostile places to play. It's copying and pasting the old Rowdies. So Point for them.
Good for the Rowdies. I'm sure tons of teams will start copying "You Still Suck and You're Ugly" after missed free throws.
All right. Anything else to hit on hoops? Big week with Georgia and Kentucky. If you didn't know, I will not be there at Kentucky, unfortunately. The lone home game I'll be missing. So a little bit of a bummer there.
Do you think with you not there in your Tommy Houck jersey that Tommy might not be ready to play?
I have not worn it since the Missouri game. So,
who's coach at Golden going to point to at the end of the second half when we're up by 19?
That's a good question. Someone's got to go fulfill those duties. So I need one of you to sneak down there behind the bench and get them rolling.
Wow. Nice seat drop there.
Hey, if that's what, if you're going to twist my arm, I guess I'll go down there and do it for you.
All right. Football. We had first media appearances for John Summerall, Buster Faulkner, and Brad White. I know we've got some quotes from Summerall with the signing day presser and then the media scrum with him at the Auburn basketball game when he got introduced. But really the first time we've seen him in front of the podium, I don't know why they were speaking. It was technically
– Because it was signing day.
I was about to say technically it was National Signing Day, which – What could have confused me? The Gators didn't sign him back.
10 a.m. signing day press conference.
Yeah, right. So, you know, just 5-6 years ago, we're freaking about some mom running off with the national letter of intent, not wanting to send it to the fax machine and, you know, waiting for a 5 o'clock presser. But we got Summerall hitting the podium at 10:30 in the morning. So, a little unusual, but I'll start with you, Will. Just your thoughts on Summerall, what he had to say. I think he was up there for 40 minutes. I mean,
40 minutes.
That's a long time to address a signing day class that had zero additions on Wednesday.
Yeah, I don't think he got any questions about signing class. He did take questions about the roster and stuff. And he just, you know, I had some really tough coaching for Coach Summerall before he was even hired, which, you know, maybe like my Boogie Flan takes might have been just a little bit premature. anyway, you know, who amongst us hasn't acted a little emotionally before all the facts played out? But anyway, I love listening to this guy talk. 41 minutes in, and I was like, wait, why does he have to go away? Can he just keep, you know, just speaking? And I thought some of the things that he said are just they remind me of Todd Golden a lot, which is kind of scary because I'm like, please figure it out, John, because this could be a lot of fun if we're really good in football too. But one of the things that stood out is he's like, you know, I don't really know what the rules are with people coming back. And, you know, obviously the Charles Bediako thing has been in the news, and he was asked, you know, about football situations and things like that and transfer portal and that sort of thing. He's like, you know, the rules could change literally tomorrow, but you just got to go out there and play. You can sit there and complain about them, or you can try to work within them as they are at this moment and be the best that you can be. And I just think that mentality is going to pay such great dividends for the University of Florida football program, where you've kind of had a lot of complaining like, oh, you know, this didn't happen, that didn't happen, and we don't have this support here or that support here, or oh, this team, Georgia, is breaking these rules and that sort of thing. They're getting away with it. You know, you used to hear that during the Jimbo FSU years. And so I just think that to have a leader like this who is like, stop making excuses and let's go put Florida back where it belongs and win some football games is really refreshing to hear. He had some great things to say about, you know, kind of his philosophy as far as like coaching and how he wants to develop the team and how he wants to make them tougher and better players, and just in-game stuff was great. He talked a little bit about the roster and you know, kind of needing to feel it out and that sort of thing. And so 40 minutes of good, great ball talk from Coach John. So it's got me excited for spring practice.
Yeah, I thought he kind of hit on with all the rule changes and the uncertainty. I'm glad he's not smart enough to understand them all, because we want a football coach, and that's what he delivered to us in those 40 minutes. But I also thought, and he mentioned this, I think, in his opening presser or another press conference, and I don't know if he's actually got the sign up, but he mentioned it again. In his office, he'll have just a sign that says coach the team. So regardless of what's going on around us in the NIL and the college football world with these TROs and basketball occurring, for him just to coach the 105 players he has right now, I know we're still trying to add a few more, but that's it. That's his job, and he understands it. It's to coach the guys he has, get them into a position to go win. You know, he was just emphatic of his love for the game. He recruiting he likes. You could see him at the Alabama basketball game sitting right next to Todd Golden. He had to leave a few instances to get on the phone. I'm sure it was some recruit calling him. But his job is to coach the football team. And having guys like Urban Meyer around, you know, kind of feeding some things in his ear, what it takes to win at the University of Florida is a fresher breath air for what we've endured the last 16 years.
A fresher breath air. A breath of midnight.
Give him a break.
It is. No, it is 12 o'clock. Midnight.
The biggest thing that stood out to me was how refreshing it is, fresh a breath air, for us to have a head coach that talks like a normal human being. And he stands up there. He doesn't sound like he's, you know, thoroughly thinking through and calculated with every single word he says. And after 4 years of the last guy, to have a coach that stands up there and just kind of, you know, shoots the breeze with the media and answers the questions without carefully picking out whatever phrase of word of cliche that he's heard or read in a coaching manual, that's nice. And I've really, that's something that through three press conferences, I've grown to really appreciate. I also appreciate the way that he has gone about discussing Florida's NIL in a way that's appreciative of what we have, but also still challenging and pushing the envelope of needing and wanting more. I think that Florida's gotten into a problem just systematically as a program of accepting the status quo when the last decade plus the status quo pretty clearly hasn't been working. And I think that Summerall's come in, and I don't know if it's just his personality or through the advice of, you know, those former coaches or people around the program, adjacent to the program. But he's really come in and pushed that envelope in a way that's not necessarily disrespectful to administration or anything, but that's being direct and firm and saying things need to change from the way they've been operating if we want to get better. And that includes, you know, expanding the booster base, expanding the people that are contributing to NIL, embracing, you know, that the rules are fluid and subject to change, and that, you know, this is a coach that his last stop at Tulane, they brought in their starting quarterback in late July from BYU, Retzlaff. So he's a coach that's going to adapt and change with the times, I think. He seems like he gets it. I mean, that you don't want to make broad sweeping statements before you see him coach a game, but in terms of the immediate feeling after the hire was made to the impression that he's made, I know on at least the three of us, and it seems like broadly on Gator fans since he's been here, is that he's a guy that gets it. He lives in reality, whereas the last guy I felt like didn't necessarily live in reality all the time and thought that his regimented process that was not going to change no matter what, the last guy ran his head into a brick wall enough to drive you crazy. He doesn't give the impression that that's what his program is going to be like. So everything he said is right so far. I'm ready to try not to cringe too hard when I say it, but I'm ready to spot the ball, I think.
Spot the ball.
I thought it was refreshing when he was bringing up the strength and conditioning program. Obviously, that's what these guys are doing right now. And, you know, when he got hired at Troy, Rusty Witt was the existing strength and conditioning coach at the time, and his full intention was going there and firing him. You know, like most assistant coaches or guys that have a large say in the program, usually you kind of get rid of them and bring in your own guys. But it sounded like after a few meetings, you know, these guys were on the same page, and he's been with them ever since. We got Rusty Witt this week too. Did anybody listen to him?
I saw some quotes, you know, him reflecting on his time in the military and stuff like that, but I haven't had a chance to sit down and listen to him or Buster or Coach White. Brad White, that is.
Yes. I thought Buster was fantastic. He's certainly not a media guy. He just looks like a good old football coach that just wants to go dial up some plays. But he talked about his versatility going back even to his high school day where he played in some sort of running offense, I imagine the wing tee or anything like that. They're going to Valdosta State and having to throw the football around, but he was unable to throw it vertically, so they threw it side to side. And that's where he kind of got his philosophy of, you know, once he got to coaching, changing within the personnel. And we've highlighted this when he got hired from was Arkansas State, Middle Tennessee State, being the quarterback coach at Georgia, and then obviously going to go lead Haynes King at Georgia Tech. It was fascinating to hear that he was pretty much going anywhere John Summerall was headed. They've had some run-ins the last 4 or 5 years at a beach house. So whether Summerall ended up at Auburn, Kentucky, wherever, seems like these two got a pretty good relationship and understanding of how much control Buster's going to have of the offense. I know Summerall said he'll have the headset in. He'll provide some feedback of, you know, maybe what he's seen defensively from the opponent to relay to the Buster and the offensive coaches, which, you know, we haven't heard of in quite some time because our last two head coaches were offensive geniuses. So what did you take away from Buster, Dev? I know you get to watch him a little bit.
Yeah, I really like Buster Faulkner. The going back to Rusty Witt really quick, I think the only quote that I saw that he had was weak things break, strong things don't break, or something to that effect. So he is speaking the language that you want to hear from a strength coach. But listening to Buster Faulkner, I really I thought that he sounds like a future head coach. Obviously, he interviewed for Memphis, and I think he got an interview with Tulane. But he's a guy that came across to me buttoned up like he's going to be a future head coach. Stuck out the most him talking about Eric Singleton, the Auburn transfer that he coached at Georgia Tech, and how the staff had so many different levels of connections to him between Marcus Davis, the new wide receiver coach, Buster Faulkner coached him while he was at Georgia Tech, and what's the inside receiver coach's name?
Is that Trick McKnight?
McKnight. That's right. But three different coaches on the staff all coached Singleton. So being able to kind of get into how fast the guy is, how they're you know, going to end up utilizing him, and how he kind of fits into that room with Vernell Brown and with Dallas Wilson. And then another guy that stuck out that they were talking to, like, it's kind of funny because we kind of know what we have with Jaden Baugh, so we kind of take that for granted. And the unknowns are going to be the passing game. So you're excited to see Singleton, and then the receiver from Georgia Tech,
Bailey Stockton
got shouted out during the press conferences. So it just. Exciting to hear about how some of these new guys coming in out of the portal are going to, you know, be contributors in the fall. Excited to see how Philo and Tramell Jones battle it out in the spring. I think the writing's kind of on the wall on what that quarterback competition is going to end up looking like. But like Summerall said, it's an open competition. If Tramell Jones outplays Philo in the spring and in fall camp, then he'll be the starter. But
He said anybody could win that job. I mean, Tulane, Darian Mensah was quarterback number three 2 weeks before their season opener. What was that, 2 years ago now?
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's got a history of playing, at the time, the best guy. So,
We'll see. If Buster Faulkner's the head coach of the offense, you would think that his guy's going to be the one that's, you know, we're kind of – pontificating and guessing on what that's going to wind up looking like, you know, in August. But you would expect his guy to be the one that ends up coming ahead. It would take a heck of an offseason from Tramell Jones or any of the other guys in that room to come in and take that job, I think.
Agree. I thought another point that was highlighted by Summerall, he mentioned him in his opening press conference when he got hired, Jaden Baugh. He mentioned, and I don't know if everyone's watched that This Is the Swamp video, but when he's in the van driving through campus, he's telling his kids, man, this number 13, he's a dude. And obviously that was the focal point of our retainage. But for him to go in there and have, I assume, a one-on-one with Jaden Baugh and kind of challenge him, right, and say, hey, everyone knows who you are now. You've put all this work in for the last 2 years. Don't let it change who you are. Still go to the, you know, this guy was setting records in the weight room since he ever since he stepped on campus. Obviously, he's been putting the work in the offseason behind the scenes. So for him to go out there and also publicly challenge him, despite him being kind of the biggest one that we wanted to retain, because it's, you know, and Buster Faulkner even mentioned it, like, hey, you can call Gainesville home forever. Like, not every kid has got the opportunity to do that at one program. So I thought they did a real good job of highlighting him as well. But also, like, hey, man, there's other guys that got opportunities in this room as well. Take what's yours and push them.
Yeah, and the one other guy that the new staff has mentioned by name, another big keep out of the transfer portal is Jaden Woods. That's two staffs now that have just said what a freak he is in the workout room. So seeing how he fits into the new scheme on defense and what Brad White wants to do on that side of the ball. Excited, man. I'm excited. Spring practice. When's I know the spring game's like April 14th, April 11th.
It's like 11th. March 6th or March 7th. I think whatever that Monday, Tuesday is. I think it's like that. I think the spring break is like end of February, early March, and then whatever that Monday, Tuesday is coming back is when we get rolling.
Spring game, April 11th. We should win the national championship on April 6th, and so that's going to give everybody time to fly back from Indianapolis to Gainesville to go see the Gators play some football against each other.
Yeah. Midway
through the SEC championship run for baseball and well on our way to Omaha. Things should be rolling pretty good by then.
Yeah. Masters Sunday as well, moving day. So could be a pretty big weekend for sports fans.
It could be. I maybe Billy Ho finally wins his first Masters.
Being a dude rocks. Sports rock.
Like Ronald Acuna starting his MVP campaign at this start.
Okay. You know? Nobody cares about Major League Baseball. It's not September. We can talk about it, you know, when the playoffs come.
Speaking on expanding donor base, Major League Baseball owner Patrick Zalupski tweeted a Gator emoji today, shouting out the Florida Victorious link and donating. So maybe that is a potential
something to monitor
expansion. Yeah.
Do you think when he tweeted his emoji, he also clicked the link and donated, or did he just tweet emojis?
I imagine the amount he would donate is not allowed on the website. So,
okay. Well, as long as the payments are being sent.
He's
the new owner of the Rays, and the Rays don't exactly break the bank on payroll for the team. So,
and you've got to
maybe we'll put that money elsewhere.
And you've got a $6 billion stadium coming. So,
well, not yet. And the city doesn't pay for that, you know.
If that city doesn't pony up, then I know a certain county in Northeast Florida that would welcome the Jacksonville Rays with open arms. Baseball's never been hotter with the Jacksonville Rays.
Hey, there you go. That's a throwback.
All right. Anything else to discuss, fellas? It's officially Super Bowl Sunday, so that's why we're coming to you tonight, late night after the game. Will and I actually have a nice little tea time, 9:30, kick off the Super Bowl Sunday festivities. It's been, what, like a year and a half since we've teed it up together?
I don't know. All I know is that when we play, you always have your worst round of the year. So get ready for a long Sunday.
Hey, when we played at Stillwater, I was 3-over-2 and still shot 77. So I just had to shake off the nerves a little bit, and then we settled in and rebounded quite nicely.
Was that an admission that I'm making you nervous?
You saw a ghost at the beginning of the round. You didn't know what it was that you were with.
Have you seen the first two holes at Stillwater? They're not the easiest. They're pretty challenging. It's the golf
course. I think what happened is I stepped up there and bombed one about 310, and he didn't know what to do.
You'll never catch me dead rooting for a Georgia Bulldog, so give me the Patriots, even if it's the Patriots in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, Mike I really McDonald, do hate that Mike McDonald NGA is a Georgia Bulldog.
I really do.
He didn't even play there. It's kind of ridiculous. He should not be able to claim them if he didn't play there. I know that's totally contradictory because I obviously didn't play at the University of Florida. But, I mean, I feel like the logic checks out for like NFL coaches, you know?
They got like a backup tight end named Jake Bobo. That reminds me of Mike Bobo. I'm out on the Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah.
All right. Well, appreciate you guys listening again. We're part of the Stadium and Gale Network and presented by our partner, Norris and Norris PA. Make sure you're following us on YouTube, Spotify, Apple. You liked and subscribed and following us on Twitter at BreakfastWTG. And keep interacting with us. Thank you for the support. Go Gators.
Go Gators.